dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. We have been blessed over the years this program has been in business to have an opportunity to take stock with regularity about, well, the war for the free world in all of its various dimensions with a woman of uncommon intelligence. She writes brilliantly. She thinks profoundly, and she is an extraordinary keeper of the flame, if you will, with respect to what the various challenges we've been facing in the past have been to freedom, and what they are reminders of in terms of today's challenges as well. She is, of course, the great Diana West. You can follow her terrific blogging and other products at dianawest.net. She is the author of The Death of the Grown-Up, American Betrayal, and most recently, The Red Thread, a search for ideological drivers behind the anti-Trump conspiracy. Diana West, good to have you with us, and thank you for taking a full hour of your time for us today. It's always a treat to be able to catch up with you, well, under any circumstances, but particularly at length. Good to have you. So, Diana, the anti-Trump conspiracy had, of course, one of its high water marks, the investigation into the so-called Russian conspiracy or the Russian collusion during the 2016 election. And in the course of it, one of the individuals who was caught up in Bob Mueller's special prosecution was Roger Stone. He has just been sentenced to 3 years in prison for some process crimes, I think it's been described as. But it's involved a lot of high drama of late in terms of both the president and William Barr, the attorney general, and a whole bunch of, well, the prosecutors on the case, as well as many others. What do you make of all this, Diana?
Well, that's a very good question, because everyone is asking it. And it's natural, because we're watching these artificial fires that are constantly being set, one from another. It's like a firebug, an arsonist is going from one place to another in our political life, in our public square. And there are real consequences of these artificial fires. And one of them, of course, is the pain and suffering of the individuals who become props or players in these fake scandals. And one of whom, of course, we're talking about and thinking about this week is Roger Stone, and a senior citizen recently with no criminal convictions in his life, his long life, suddenly being slammed with this sentence for these process crimes. And people can say, well, he did commit these crimes. He did do these things that he's been convicted of. But the crux of the matter here, and this is where you find it being political firestorms and arsons, is the fact that these laws are not being applied equally. And I think that is where we have to come back to in all of these cases, whether it's General Flynn or Roger Stone or Paul Manafort or any of the people who are now in prison, facing prison, in jeopardy, having their lives and their fortunes and their honor destroyed in the process, where we have to actually remain grounded. There is no equal protection here, no equal justice. And I would just like to throw out a marvelous quotation from Thomas Jefferson, who wrote, "When one undertakes to administer justice, it must be with an even hand and by rule. What is done for one must be done for everyone in equal degree." And this really is the basis of our entire republic.
And let me just ask the question, if that's not the case, if that's not how the laws are administered and enforced, what are the implications for a society like ours? I mean, why would Thomas Jefferson make that very forceful admonition?
Well, this is the basis of liberty, and the opposite of that is tyranny. And this becomes the world that we live in. We are living in a tyrannical society when the Justice Department, when the FBI, when the courts are suddenly, or not suddenly, but are over a century or so, becoming beholden to specific interests, perhaps we should say, to certain parties, to certain ideologies. I mean, this is where we are, and when we see the chemistry lesson that really Donald Trump has been teaching us as the catalyst of all of these activities, all of these horrendous eruptions of this unjust system coming to the fore, we realize that it is all political, partisan efforts to continue in the anti-Trump conspiracy, to continue to unseat him, to continue to benight his chances for re-election, and to punish and penalize anyone who might want to get near him and help him in these efforts. Because, of course, what we see are our allies through his life, people who he's come to know or associate with or call on in various parts of his life, who are now being slammed with these egregious sentences or simply caught up in sort of Orwellian, Dickensian kind of justice nightmare of constantly being under threat of jail and bankruptcy and all the rest of it. And, you know, I'm thinking of General Flynn or Paul Manafort. There are others whose names are not as well known to us who have suffered, lost houses, lost, you know, all manner of employment, all the rest of it. You know, look at Carter Page, look at Michael Caputo. I mean, the list goes on and on in terms of people who have come into this firestorm, which is not about them. And that's what I mean by these are artificial eruptions and arsons that are supposed to distract us. These people become the tools of the deep state, of these ideological tyrants that are really in control of most of the government in Washington. We have the Oval Office, we have a few allies of the president sprinkled throughout, very, very few, and then we have this deep state, this bureaucratic and also elected, but mostly bureaucratic, we think of it in terms of being people embedded in the government system, with the power to do whatever they please. And this is sort of pitted against Donald Trump with his Twitter account, with his presidential pardon power, and with his immense popularity with the American people, which we are seeing flower and grow.
Dina, what I guess I just wanted to impress upon our audience is, in addition to the injustices that have been meted out to many of the people you've named and others, what is so corrosive in this regard is if the rule of law is not faithfully enforced and without favor to whichever political party or philosophy may be, you know, most admired by the people responsible for enforcing the law, there is undeniably, certainly over time, going to be a loss of confidence in the system and a willingness to submit to the laws on the part of the American people. And that really inevitably conduces to the end of our republic. And this is something that I appreciate so much your standing against, that kind of erosion of confidence specifically, but also, more importantly, the takedown of our republic. Dina, we're going to come back for a further conversation about how this is playing out more broadly in terms of the people around the president and the work that they've been trying to do for him and for all of us. That and much more with Dina West, straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back for the second installment in this hour-long conversation with our dear friend and much admired colleague, Dina West. Dina, we were talking about the relatively few people who actually are loyal to this president, who are engaged in serving our country in his administration, and the large numbers that aren't so loyal. An object example of this was, of course, our friend Rich Higgins, who recently wrote in the Wall Street Journal about his experience when having the temerity, out of loyalty to the President of the United States, he warned him about some of these deep state actors and operations against him, only to have that memo, which the President, I think, found very troubling, needless to say, passed to H.R. McMaster, one of the deep state denizens who the President, unfortunately, entrusted with the job of national security advisor for a time. And McMaster summarily fired Rich Higgins and had him frog marched out of the building, basically. Something that, when Lieutenant Colonel Vindman was given a similar kind of farewell, was the source of much remonstration. Talk a little bit about Rich Higgins' case, if you would, and how it really is kind of a prism on this larger problem within the Trump presidency and the anti-Trump conspiracy, as you've called it in your book, The Red Thread.
Yes, well, when Rich Higgins was fired by McMaster, we saw him leave the premises, in the sense that we were aware of this. This was a story. It was certainly noted, and yet there was none of the kerosene sprayed around his frog marching out of the building, his summary dismissal, his loyal service to this country suddenly interrupted, particularly given that he was, as you say, and is and remains a loyal supporter of this president and his policies and a very articulate spokesman thereof. And yet we compare his case directly to Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, and we see the kerosene go, again, this false eruption of emotion, this notion that nothing like this has ever happened before, it is the greatest outrage in this world, the whole thing becomes, again, one of these arsons, one of these created spectacles that are supposed to drive emotion in the populace to be outraged at simply, frankly, the president's prerogative, long overdue, in terms of separating from his White House somebody secretly, covertly, actually going outside of all kinds of army codes and in terms of leaking, in terms of going outside chain of command, things that actually in a normal world would bring him up on charges in his own chain of command, seeing him separated from the White House in terms of absolutely business as usual, but suddenly created into a fake scandal. And so the contrast is a very good lesson in terms of how the press is able to whip up hysteria and not bring light and truth and facts to the people, but bring this fake emotion that really is sort of their main product at this point in terms of disinformation and emotion.
Well, and it's kind of the kerosene or the flammable liquids that are part and parcel of the arson that is now used relentlessly to take down the president. By contrast, and this goes back to the issue we were discussing earlier about the rule of law and its asymmetrical enforcement, we're seeing those who have been disloyal to the president, those who have been actually to the point of, I think, treasonous, disloyal to our country, because he is the elected leader of that country, after all, are getting a pass from the criminal justice system. We've seen, to this point at least, people like Jim Comey and John Brennan and Andrew McCabe, to just pick a couple, who are up to their teeth in activities that were subversive, were, to use again your characterization, arsonist. And there seems to be no justice for them at all, let alone, you know, Hillary Clinton and her ilk.
Well, this is where we get back to this notion that there is no equal justice in our country at this point, when senior officials, even if we excuse the subversion and the coup involvement, even if we go to the so-called, they're not actually process crimes. Lying to Congress in the course of an investigation is lying to Congress. It is perjury. If we remember, the people have gone to jail for perjury to Congress, for obstructing justice. These were raised as very serious charges, supposedly by the House impeachment, in terms of obstruction of Congress in the president's recent impeachment charade. I mean, these are serious charges in the sense that we address them. We know that these senior officials have committed these very crimes, just these alone, without even getting into their seditious activities, which certainly need airing and investigation. But we even had a criminal referral on James Comey from the Inspector General that was dismissed by the Bar Justice Department. We can look at James Clapper. James Clapper is the poster boy of absolutely proven, we haven't gone to court of law, but proven in terms of all the evidence out there, of multiple lies to Congress. Absolutely no referrals, no indictments, no charges, and indeed what we might call emoluments in the terms of having leaked the Steele dossier, something he lied about, something he lied twice about. In terms of leaking it to CNN, he then appears as a paid CNN commentator a few weeks, months later. I mean, this is the sort of crude activity that we, the people, have already been able to identify and understand and see proven the facts before us, and no justice. And yet we see Roger Stone now facing 4+ years in prison. We see General Flynn still under this heavy weight of indictment, charge, you know, prison, whatever, we don't even know. I mean, the whole thing has been postponed. The psychological torment is immeasurable. I mean, this is going on while people like Comey, Brennan, Clapper, McCabe are being excused and indeed celebrated and indeed looked up to as commentators on all of the fake news networks that are involved in this, you know, flame throwing against the Trump administration.
Rewarded, I think, is the other word that comes to mind for their conduct. Diana, you mentioned the Barr Justice Department. Bill Barr is under considerable pressure to resign over his decision, which he says was taken before the president tweeted about it, though it has obviously been embroiled in controversy since the president did that tweet and others, prompting thousands of former Justice Department employees to weigh in, as I said, calling for Bill Barr's head on a pike, basically. Again, what's going on here, as you see it? How does this relate to some of the things we've been discussing, and where does it go from here?
Yes, well, it's again, more of these object lessons. First of all, going to the thousand of Department of Justice associates signing this petition, it goes to the extent to which the deep state has infiltrated our justice system, our FBI, our intelligence community. I mean, it's just yet another one of these little proofs that we have as to who these people are. Their loyalty is not to the law or the Constitution. It is to a political ideology. And so I think that becomes a very simple object lesson to look at that. When we look at the great tweet war going on here with William Barr going to, I believe it was NBC, with his upset over the president tweeting, the president had every right to tweet, to say whatever he pleased at this point. There was nothing there. He has all right to pardon whoever he pleases. He's all right to comment. Barr has all right to interfere, is the word we use for the attorney general administering his department. I mean, the whole thing, every piece of this is another one of these artificial scandals that are inflated again with, we can, you know, drop a match into the kerosene once again. I find the whole tweet war between Barr and Trump to be highly artificial. I think if Barr really had trouble with the president's tweeting, he would have called him on the telephone privately rather than airing this on a fake news network. So I was actually quite incredulous over Barr doing this in the first place, and I don't believe the president has done anything wrong. He must communicate directly with the American people because he cannot get his message out through the normal channel. So we have this situation where the press is now playing on this, the justice officials are playing on this, trying to create yet another problem, another one of these things. We've had statements from Barr's spokesman saying there is no resignation in order. If he resigned over the president's tweeting, it would be the most crazy turn of this yet. Frankly, you know, I am very upset with Attorney General Barr for doing what I think he should be doing as Attorney General, both in terms of the anti-Trump conspiracy, for example, dismissing the criminal referral on James Comey, which we actually got from an Obama-appointed Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, going back to, what, July of 2019, allowing that to just go away, not seeing any further releases of, say, the FISA warrant, the original redacted FISA warrant that we're still waiting to see on spying on Carter Page, not the scope memo, the so-called scope memo, which was what Robert Mueller was given by Rod Rosenstein, that is still redacted. I mean, these are the kinds of papers that we need to see, the American people need to see. President Trump gave Attorney General Barr power to declassify or release. I understand many of these things have already been declassified. However, they have not been released over a year. So we're still waiting to see Barr acting as an attorney general who wants to restore law and order, and we are not seeing it. And I think people are starting to understand this as they watch these various cases go forward, such as the McCabe, or not go forward as the case may be. So this, again, I think none of these things basically that we're talking about can be taken at face value. And we always have to go back to where is the political maneuver here, because none of these people are acting cleanly.
Dina, we have to pause for a brief moment. We'll be right back with more, and we're going to talk a bit about Russian influence operations on the 2020 election and what we should have learned by now about all of this from what went before. That and much more with Dina West, the author of American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character, right after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined by Dina West for this full hour of conversation about, well, the anti-Trump conspiracy, among other things, and in particular, the ongoing arson that seems to be operating against the president now in the form of this question of whether or not Russian influence operations are at work trying to affect the 2020 election. And that the president has somehow interposed objections to the intelligence community forthrightly addressing that possibility. And this would, it seems, be the predicate for yet another, I don't know, witch hunt or impeachment or something. Who knows? So, Dina, what's going on here in this context? And are we watching more matches being thrown into the pyre to hopefully take out the president, hopefully, of course, from the point of view of the arsonist, not so much for the rest of us?
Yes. I mean, in the short answer is yes. Smoke and mirrors, since our theme of the day is arson, in the interest of destroying people's sanity and subverting an election and taking out a president, yes, throwing a lighted match and creating smoke, mirrors, and more fire in order to manipulate the public yet again into this completely insane notion that Donald Trump has been colluding with Vladimir Putin to gain power over the American people and further the make Russia great again, which is essentially the program that the left is accusing Donald Trump of engaging in. Treason, Russian agent. We'll probably start seeing all of these themes come to the fore again, which is going to make some people feel like they are living through that movie Groundhog Day in terms of politics, because of course we have seen this before. We went through it for several years. We took a right turn over to Ukraine for a while, and looks like they're steering us back to Russian influence, source to the intelligence community, which is part of the deep states, or maybe the leading edge of the deep state assault, not just on Donald Trump, but on our democracy. So I think Americans are at the point where everybody's very, very hip to this, but it is truly extraordinary to watch how we now have to deal with it again, because that essentially becomes Donald Trump's job again, his defenders' job again, the Congress's job again, the Republicans, and it is indeed crazy-making.
I want to take a step back, just do a reality check here. One thing that is certain is that there are lots of people who would like Donald Trump not to be president of the United States. And I find it very hard to believe that list doesn't include Vladimir Putin, especially when the alternative could be, I don't know, a guy who took his honeymoon in the Soviet Union. I mean, This is evidence of a certain not only romanticism of the good old days in the USSR, but of, you know, a deep ideological commitment to the socialist slash communist cause on the part of Bernie Sanders. So it doesn't compute. And we're going to talk in a moment about, you know, the preference for Trump over Clinton that we were led to believe was operating in 2016. Why that seems also ridiculous. But just staying with the present topic, the president apparently was irate over the fact that the intelligence community's lead expert on this Russian influence business went and briefed Congress about what she thought was this evidence of a preference for Donald Trump and working to try to advance that preference through hook and crook without coming to him first, without briefing him. That would seem not an unreasonable thing for him to be annoyed by. The question then becomes, is he trying to interpose objections into people actually monitoring any evidence of Russian involvement? But for heaven's sakes, I hope that the question is broader than just, is Russia involved in our elections, but is China involved in our elections? And there can't be any doubt that the Chinese do not want Donald Trump reelected. So what's going on here is, it seems, more of the same, Diana, and designed to, at the very least, to take our attention off the ball of the true problems that we're confronting in this regard, and more to the point, to continue to consume, as you've said, the time, the energies, the focus of the administration when they desperately are needed in more serious places. So I want basically just this question put, you know, as starkly as I can. Is there no limit to what these folks are prepared to do to take us down? And what should be done in response?
Well, there seems to be no limit at this point, because we've seen the complete subversion of all of these different key important law enforcement, justice enforcement, intelligence departments' capabilities directed at not protecting America from coronavirus, from Chinese subversion, from Russian. Russians, of course, are China's great ally in military and economic, all manner of military and economic agreements at this point. We can't forget Russia on the Chinese team. All of these many threats, everything going on at this time, and yet their focus is not to protect the American people, not to allow the duly elected president to protect the American people and advance our interests, but rather to, as you say, take him down, to subvert all manner of normal operations of a presidency. So these are desperate people. It is the same desperation, again, that drove me to write the book you published, The Red Thread, A Search for Ideological Drivers Inside the Anti-Trump Conspiracy.
By people who have considerable attachment to and connections with Russia, no less.
Exactly. Russia, the communist movement, affinities with the socialist project. And also, one unifying thread there is a complete absorption and projection and really just complete involvement with the ends justify the means. These are not people bound by the law, by their constitutional oaths, and we can document it. So this becomes a subversive counterinsurgency, to go back to Rich Higgins' work that he has done on some of these same issues, inside our country, occupying Washington, occupying the intelligence agencies and the federal police agencies, the FBI, against a normal, lawful political activity in our country. I mean, the threat could not be more ominous when you essentially understand that what they are doing, they are furthering the interests of our enemies, whether it be China, whether it be Russia, in their intervention into our normal democratic life, the health of our republic. So very serious, very desperate, and again, very dire. And right now, the most important thing Donald Trump has in terms of what to do is, he does have a truly remarkable connection to the American people outside of his administration all across the country.
This brings me back to Hillary and the whole thesis of the piece of 2016. Diana, you've done important work, and I've been so excited that it's not only been published recently by the Daily Caller, but also been amplified massively by Dan Bongino, who is evidently as much a fan of yours as I am, about this project called Skolkovo. And I want you to just take a couple of minutes to remind us what that was all about and how it could possibly be that a woman who, and her husband for that matter, Bill and Hillary Clinton both, how people who were so deeply compromised by the Russians, who had done so much in their service, could be other than the much preferred candidate of Russia in the 2016 election.
Yes, well, this is a very little known area of the Obama-Clinton years that Don Bongino has been talking about recently. The original digging on this was done by our friend Peter Schweitzer, who unearthed this Army report from that was written in 2012. So this was, you know, the peak of Clinton-Obama years, looking at what is essentially a massive transfer of cutting-edge Western technology to Vladimir Putin's Russia in terms of building a Russian Silicon Valley known as Skolkovo within commuting distance of Moscow. And the people that the Clinton State Department and Obama administration, because of course this is all part one and the same, were able to enlist in this remarkable project to essentially modernize and take into even places above our own technology, the Russian state of technology and military technology, because some of these applications have dual use, not just civilian, but also military, which is why the Army was involved in looking at it, were a number of important American companies who also were donating massive amounts of money into the Clinton Foundation. So we once again see that disgusting, ugly trough of campaign contributions, call it what you will, foundation contributions, that in the 90s, Bill Clinton used in a more crude form in terms of his reelection campaign involving money coming in from the Chinese military, where we saw a massive transfer of American military technology to China in the 90s. Now we see the new and improved version of this this corruption in the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton State Department, the Obama administration, whereby they essentially created and advanced Russian technology to a point where we see the development of hypersonic engine technology that is now being deployed by Vladimir Putin's military in these seriously advanced cruise missiles that we don't have, nuclear missiles, we do not have an answer for at this point, at least that we are told about. So this is the state of danger that these people brought us to. And again, your opening remarks. Why would Vladimir Putin want to change horses when he's got the Clinton couple having been the greatest promoters and modernizers of communist China and Russian technology that the world has ever seen since Franklin Roosevelt?
Including the technology that is now pointed at us. This is the thing. It's not just commercial advantages and so on. They have helped weaponize our enemies. This is treason. I don't know how else to describe it. And they've profited from it. And the idea that Putin wouldn't want that team in charge is just crazy. And obviously a deflection. Diana, we have to pause for one last break. We're going to come right back and we will drill down a bit further on this and a bit more history, because this is one of Diana's strong suits, about Russian compromise of our own people. That and more straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back for the fourth and final installment of this special hour-long conversation with our friend and colleague and great contributor here at Secure Freedom Radio, Diana West. She is the author again of Death of the Grown-Up, American Betrayal, and The Red Thread. And Diana, in American Betrayal in particular, you drill down on the enemy within problem. The fact that we have typically, at least since Joe McCarthy's day, averted our gaze from the fact of that problem. And I wanted to call to our audience's attention a very important piece that you've written about some of that period in which McCarthy was basically at the cusp of perhaps his most important investigation, just as he was taken out. Give us that backstory, if you would, because it's so relevant, I think, in many ways to what's going on today.
Well, it is, and it does show us how none of this is new. And, you know, each generation believes they've discovered it, but then it turns out that this has been going on for 100 years in terms of this ransacking and undermining of our nation by forces loyal and beholden to and enamored with communism. Joe McCarthy when 1954 began, Joe McCarthy was riding high. He was the fourth most popular man in America. People saw him as a presidential candidate, perhaps. He was having great success with a number of his different investigations. And as you mentioned, one of the most sensational was an investigation into a complex of labs and development military development agencies known as Fort Monmouth, both civilian and military in this complex. And they were doing cutting-edge technology on radar and missiles and all kinds of things. Very, very sensitive material. Prior to Joe McCarthy's investigation into what was going on there, there was all manner of problems there in terms of security risks. The commanders of the fort, their security team, were plagued by people that they thought should not be handling sensitive technology, whom they would dismiss and whom they would find later reinstated, having gone through some kind of testing or loyalty board or whatever the mechanism was. And this was the problem that Joseph McCarthy walks into. And to make a very long story short, the investigation there was netting all number of people who had connections to the communist movement, to the Rosenberg Ring. Julius Rosenberg had worked himself in that Fort Monmouth complex earlier in the 1940s. There were people who were still friendly with him, who knew him, who had been part of his cell. People related to those people. In other words, this is sort of different kinds of, you know, hives and cells of these different people who basically, when you think, come right down to it, should not be handling top secret American technology, knowing their sympathies. So this is what he was looking at, and the problems of the commander of the fort. He was trying to get rid of them, but yet they were being mysteriously reinstated. So as Joe McCarthy is figuring out that there is a Pentagon loyalty board with unknown people involved who are actually doing this returning of very suspicious characters into our military complex, he starts talking about subpoenaing these people to come before his committee and say, what are they doing? You start seeing the real last set of attacks on him that made him suspend his hearings and enter into what people have heard of. Most people have heard of the Army McCarthy hearings, this completely inexplicable kind of circus that he was enmeshed in that then segued straight into censure hearings, which are also trumped up and led to his ultimate censure at the end of 1954 and loss of his committee standing, etc., and no more investigations, and he was dead within a few years after that.
He was destroyed before he was dead, of course, and that was the point. And you've documented in your book, Diana, how the Soviet Union and the Communist Party here as well made a concerted effort to bring that about. Destroying him was job one because he was on the case. He was making progress. He did have the support of the American people. He had to be ruined. And this has now been, unfortunately, often under the rubric of McCarthyism, the line of attack of enemies inside our country who are trying to do much the same kind of subversion or defeat of this country from within, even in our own time. Nope.
Absolutely. And the worst part of it is that so much of that fear of McCarthyism comes from the right. The right has been completely brainwashed on the subject. And this becomes a very difficult hurdle to leap, because if you don't understand what subversion is and you don't understand who in your history has been fighting it and uncovering it and going back to what they did and learning from it, then how can you possibly help yourself? So again, we're continuously working on our enemy's behalf, falling all over ourselves and keeping ourselves from the clarity that we require to combat these most pernicious, unseen, covert kinds of embedded enemies. I mean, in terms of people being on understanding, starting to get a handle on this kind of subversion, particularly following World War II and into the 50s, even beyond. However, once McCarthy was destroyed, it did become a marginalized endeavor. And so, the way the truth will out, people say truth will out. However, when it is marginalized, when it is demonized, it really doesn't matter. It doesn't seem to affect our ship of state or our understanding or handle on events. And so this becomes such a dangerous weapon in the hands of our enemy, just to continue to subvert us and deceive us.
It's just an incredibly important aspect of, again, the ongoing struggle that we're facing. And if we are not free to bring factual information to bear in exposing and challenging and hopefully successfully countering these enemies within, and whether they're, by the way, on the left or whether they're Islamists or Sharia supremacists, whatever you want to call them, or otherwise, it doesn't matter their motivations. What matters is what they're trying to do. And if we can't talk about it, if we are silenced or simply smeared and vilified and otherwise excoriated in ways that make people not want to pay attention to these uncomfortable truths and the people who are bringing them to them, it is setting us up for ultimately our destruction from within by such enemies, and it must be resisted at every turn. And Diana, again, I think your courage, you've been subjected to a fair amount of this, as have I, but your courage and your perseverance in advancing these facts and the conclusions that must be drawn from them is both an inspiration and ever so deeply appreciated. So just to finish up on the Fort Monmouth story, you know, I've been struck. I have been listening to a podcast entitled Espionage, and some of the documentation of the extent to which people who had, as you say, these, well, I think quite evident attachments to and support for the Soviet Union and for communism, and who nonetheless were given access to, well, the Manhattan Project, among other things, and other very sensitive technologies, is simply mind-boggling. Now, admittedly, during that period, we were, as you've documented so well in American Betrayal, supposedly on the same side with the Soviet Union. And yet, it bespeaks such an indifference to ideological considerations and DNA of these people that it really constitutes, it seems to me, egregious malfeasance. And again, that's relevant to our own time, is it not?
Well, it is. And again, these same sorts of truth tellers and American patriots are the ones whose story is lost because of the triumph and the success of the deep state people, of the communists, of the globalists. We tend to talk about the same sorts of motivations today. Their success in terms of seizing the ground of government has really not been reckoned with. I think, you know, obviously we are looking at it now, but many people tend to think of it as something, you know, post-Obama or something that Donald Trump has dug up, but which he has. However, we are looking at this tremendously long arc of 100 years now, since certainly since the Russian Revolution, but of course even before that. But it just continues to take us closer to that date of tyranny, which, you know, the biggest deception of all is that these people are, quote, progressive or, quote, liberal. They are tyrants. They are tyrannous, and their efforts are to control the people. And you know, everything is so upside down when the sort of kind of the word cloud around Democrats is something that's supposed to be free and wonderful, whereas the people who are seriously standing up for the Constitution and for liberty for individuals are the Republican Party at this point, certainly headed by Donald Trump. And the word cloud around that is, you know, repressive and retrograde and all of these things. But again, that's part of the disinformation that we are still subject to. So it's you know, the big lie is something that came to be with the rise of mass media and totalitarianism. And Robert Conquest, the great historian, dated that back, the first big lie successfully weaponized by Joseph Stalin being the Ukraine terror famine.
Even before Hitler, who is credited with coining that phrase. Diana, we are hard out of time. So much more to talk about. Let's do this again soon. As always, it's been a delight and so informative as well as inspiring. I know you'll keep up the great work. Follow it, please, at dianawest.net, and we will talk with you soon. And I hope to the rest of you again on Monday. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.